Welcome to the Fourth Age, a Wheel of Time podcast brought to you by Dragonmount.com.
The Wheel of Time is an epic fantasy series written by Robert Jordan. There are currently 11 novels in the main series as well as one prequel novel.
Sadly, in September of 2007, as he was working on finishing the series, Robert Jordan lost a long and hard-fought battle.
However, despite the loss of its creator, the wheel turns on.
This podcast is dedicated to discussing and enjoying the monumental work of fiction that is The Wheel of Time.
Welcome to the Fourth Age Wheel of Time podcast. My name is Virginia, and I'm happy to be back with you. And also back with us today is Morgan.
Hi, guys. It's great to be back here. The only dark friend on the show.
That's right. And with us today for the first time is Mark. Mark, say hello to everybody and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Thanks, Virginia, for that beautiful introduction. I've had many worse and not many better, so good job there. My name's Mark. I'm from Alberta, Canada. I've been reading The Wheel of Time for 12 years, and I just find it absolutely amazing how much you guys have done with this place, and I'm extremely honored that you would let me join you in some of your podcast discussions.
Well, it's great to have you.
As an also addition to my introduction here, guys, I will apologize to everybody right here, right now. I'm new to the podcasting. I'm new to actually talking the names, so I will screw some of them up because I've been reading the books for years. I've developed my own thoughts on how things are said, and even going through the glossaries and the lovely encyclopedia-watt.org site that's out there, my pronunciation is still off, so please keep the flaming, if you can, to a minimum. I am trying to learn, I'm trying to adapt, but until I can actually get around to it, I will make mistakes, and I'm warning everybody of that right now.
Actually, that's something that we need to reiterate, too. Andrew and I mentioned that in the first podcast. We are just fans of the Wheel of Time. We try to be scholars, but we do make mistakes. We occasionally mispronounce things, and we're always willing to listen if you have a question or comment. And we hope that we'll get them right for the most part, but if we don't, please be patient with us. We're trying. And the other thing that I want to mention at this point in the podcast is that, which I should have done sooner, is that there will be spoilers. So if you haven't read beyond the first book or two, you might want to tune out now, because we're going to talk about everything up to and including book 11 and the prequel. Our topic for today is going to be objects of the power, and this will cover not only the obvious objects that use the power, such as Tarangriel, Angriel, and Saangriel, but eventually we're going to also cover power-wrought metal, Gwendiar, things that were made by the power.
Going on with the talks of the various items that use the power, such as our Angriel, Saangriel, and Tarangriel, there's quite a few mentions of the various Angriel and Saangriel out there, even though they're not as proliferant as people seem to think. But that's because in one of the books they actually say that a lot of these items were destroyed in the Breaking, and finding them again right now is pretty impressive if you can. Some of the first ones that we have found out was there was the small ivory figurine that Moraine uses in, actually it's, I think she starts it off in the first book, is where she first uses that one, and that's the one that Egwene sort of looks at and was like, what's that? All nice and curious in her usual way. But as soon as she says that it has to do with the power, everyone sort of backs away thinking it's to do with the power and therefore bad.
Right, that was one that she used actually in the Two Rivers, I believe, during the battle with the Trollocs, and then certainly she used it when she healed Tam from the wound that he had taken. And then she also had her staff, but I don't believe that was a triangle. I think she just used that as a focus point.
Yeah, it was only a focus point.
Yeah, she said that many, many times. That the staff does not have any power, she just uses it to focus. It's just like the little blue thing that she has hanging from her hair. Kissiera, I think is how it's pronounced. Is worn by women from Kyrian. It's the same sort of idea.
Right, those are definitely the first introductions that we have to objects.
Moraine mentioned in the beginning that no objects actually hold the power with them. These are just amplifiers and...
Well, that's true, but there's also mention, I believe it is Masana who talks about it. She makes mention of something called the Standing Flows, You may or may not remember hearing about that in one of the later books, about how stuff is just sort of done, ready to go, kind of like a constructed spell. It's all ready to go, you just gotta activate it, take off whatever safeties or whatnot, or just do the right combination of things, and it works.
Right, we mentioned that on a previous podcast briefly. The standing flows no longer exist, but there were Terangreal, and Alviarin marveled that anybody was allowed to use them. She thought that was very bizarre, and there was actually another instance when Samael gave the Shido Aiel the Narbaha, I'm not sure how, that's how you pronounce it, or the Fool Boxes that would allow them to travel. Those would work for anybody as well. So clearly those, they had to have some connection to the power, whether anybody channeling was involved or not. There were no standing flows involved in Samael's boxes, so they must be able to hold something of the power, some sort of a tied-off weave that can be activated by anybody.
That's what I was thinking the standing flows were just flows of the power tied off onto, you know, the general Terangreal to make them work for anybody, channelers and non-channelers, and just set up wide through the entire world.
They actually aren't Terangreal or standing flows or anything of the like, because what happened was Samael and Grendel were there at the time that they gave those away, and so what happens is they push the button and Samael would weave a gateway right there, because Grendel later asked him, where did you send them? Oh, I sent them here, there, everywhere else. So he actually admitted to opening the gateways himself. He actually didn't have the boxes do anything for themselves.
Yeah, hence the term fool's box.
Yeah, no, that was. Actually, I was thinking of the lies that he told him about the 3 days for it to reactivate, but all that was obviously fake. You're right, he was probably tying off all the, he was already setting those gateways himself, but I don't know how he timed it so that when each one of them pushed their button that he was ready to go with it. I sort of wonder if he didn't do some sort of a tied off weave to the box that would activate when they push the button and then dissipate.
I think he might have just like randomly opened up the gateways, you know, just as one of those things that gave out just a handful of the ones around, and there's so many of those boxes out there that somebody would have had to have pressed the box to open up a gateway, and he just randomly opened them up for people.
Like, what I gathered of that scenario there was he'd sit and he'd open up all the gateways. Like, he had X number of boxes, so he knew that he'd have to open up X number of weaves, and he tied them off in such a way that they would end up dissipating and shutting themselves down nice and quick after a certain amount of time. And, I mean, that's not a hard thing to do. Anyone who's ever done any kind of power weaving knows that you can tie off a weave to keep it there all the time, or you can tie it off loosely enough that it'll dissipate in time.
That's true, but I have to kind of wonder if even a Forsaken could open multiple gateways and leave them open at one time. There is a limit to power, even for Rand and the Forsaken. So I'm going to kind of go with my theory that it was a weave that he placed on each box that was tied off and set to activate, because we know that they can do that because Elaine and some of the others were worried about the Black Aja leaving traps at the house that they had vacated. Set, and Rand has tied off all those traps around Kalendor that just activate whenever somebody does something, uses the power, or, you know, even touches something, they can go, just be activated and they dissipate. So that's sort of what I think about the fool boxes.
That's an idea, but you also have to remember that Grendel and Samael were linked. So, I mean, he had access, not exactly to twice as much power, but he had access to a lot of the power that Grendel could hold, as well as all the ones that he could hold as well. And I mean, that's a lot of power, but he also had access to more of the power because he was linked.
I don't remember them being linked. I may be wrong about that, but I thought she taunted them about did he want to link and try to do something. I really don't think they were linked. I think they were each holding the power separately at that point in time, because when they're walking back and Shido Harand is spying on them, one of them had released their the power and let their mask of mirrors drop, and I think Grendel had and Samael hadn't. It's a big deal when one of them drops the link and one doesn't, or something like that. Even though Elaine was talking about how difficult it was if somebody just let go of the power when there was a link involved and they were holding the control of it. Anyway, we're sort of diverting from our discussion. We should probably get back onto the actual objects of power. We talked about the first Angreal that we saw, which was Moraine's.
I grabbed that one as the first one because it's the first one we see. I mean, there's so many other, the fat little man, Angreal, that Rand uses. Like, he found his in the Great Holding in Tyr, which is a great place for it because, well, no one would have thought to raid it. But there was also talk in, I believe it was the second book up at Falm, of another object kind of like that one that Bale Domon had managed to acquire and said that some people, when they held it, felt warm, but he couldn't feel anything. That might have been an Angreal. Morgan, what were your thoughts on that again? Why don't you go ahead?
It was before he actually got to Falma. It was one of the reasons why he started heading off, because the Dark Friend, or what he believed were Dark Friends and Trollocs, were following after him, was because what he thought was just a symbol of the ancient Aes Sedai group, which turned out to be the seal, but with the actual little fat man, like you said, I believe it was because it's an Angreal, because many men hold on to it and it feels warm. I don't remember the exact description of it, but it sounds a lot like the one that Rand has.
Pretty unusual for somebody to find one that was attuned to men, evidently.
I was figuring it would be one of those little lucky things that he found it, and I was thinking that it might end up showing up again in one of the Forsaken's hands. I mean, it'll do, you know, pretty much nothing against Rand's male Chodan call, but, you know, any little bit helps.
The one that Bale Domon had, do you think that was the same Angreal that Rand found later?
No, actually, because I thought that at first, like the first couple times I read that, you know, he mentioned it, sounded similar, but if I'm not mistaken, in the Shadow Rising, when they're going through the Great Hold, they mentioned that nobody had been down into the Great Hold or added new items in there for, I think it was like a couple decades or a couple centuries. So it would be impossible for that one to be Bale Domon's. And also the Seanchan had confiscated the glow rod, the little statue, and the seal, all from his little hidden compartment as a gift to the High Lord Turok, because he was collecting Quaendiar and trying to get a, you know, big collection, yet smaller than the one for the Empress.
That's right, I'd forgotten that Rand found his in the Great Holding, so it couldn't have been the same one that Bale Domon's had. But I've always wondered, maybe this is another thing that Robert Jordan thought was extremely obvious, but I've always wondered who took his Angreal after Dumai's Wells, because he was frantically searching the wagons for it and couldn't find it. So I am assuming that either one of the Asha men, one of the Aes Sedai, or perhaps one of the Forsaken, or one of the Forsaken directing one of those people, absconded with it.
I personally have a sneaky suspicion that Mazrim Taim managed to walk off with it. That's just my personal crazy theory, because we all know that Taim versus Rand is going to be one of the most epic things that's going to happen down the road. But that's a whole other side story. I can go into that one at great detail another time.
That's a good point, because if Ashman actually did pick it up and was one of Taim's followers, he could have easily passed it up to him to get a higher ranking, like maybe one of the Battle Mahales or Storm Mahales. Maybe they got some of their ranking because of that.
Could very well be.
I like the idea that one of the Ashaman would have taken it, but I'm sure that the Aes Sedai relieved Rand of that little thing when they first took him, so I'm not sure when the Ashaman, during all that battle at Dumai's Wells, might have had an opportunity to search through the Aes Sedai's things in order to take it. I just can't imagine that they would have left it with Rand for him to find it. And then, actually, I'm not sure when Mazrim Taim would have had the opportunity to search through Rand's things either, unless some of the Aes Sedai had it in one of the wagons and just, you know, decamped without taking it. I can't imagine how any of the Ashaman would have had a chance to take it. So I'm going to kind of bet that it's with one of the Aes Sedai that kidnapped him.
That's a good point. And, I mean, they were saying about how they thoroughly stripped him, bound him, yada yada. So, I mean, that's probably a very good possibility right there. But the problem with that is, actually, not really a problem, because, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, they did end up swearing oaths of fealty. But oaths of fealty don't necessarily mean oaths of obedience. So, I mean, even if he did ask them to say, did you take my fat little man, they don't necessarily, well, I mean, they can't lie, but they don't necessarily have to say, yes, I took it, I have it here, if you get what I'm saying.
They wouldn't give it back to him anyways, because aren't all Aes Sedai have the first thing, anything that has to do whatsoever with power is the tower and the towers alone?
Yeah, my biggest problem with that whole theory is that there are actually a couple of Aes Sedai that were present at Dumas Wells that kidnapped him who never swore the oaths, Galena Kasban for one and Katarina Alruddin for another. And we know that Katarina is still running around, even though Galena is pretty much Tarava's toy for the rest of her life, at least we can hope so. But I know Katarina was there and she got loose, and I think one or two others were unaccounted for too. So I think that we'll find out that one of them has it in the long run. What they're going to do with it, I don't know, but they could probably trade it to any of the male Forsaken and make major brownie points.
That's assuming, of course, that, like, I mean, if they know a bit about anything outside of their heart, they can always try and find the link through all their dark friend hearts that they've got to Alvyaran or any other member of the Supreme Council of the Black Aja, and try and curry favor that way as well, maybe try and get themselves onto that council. So now that we've gone through that, the fat little man, Angreal, are there any other ones that absolutely stand out in your minds that you can remember?
The ivory bracelet that Moraine found in Ruidian that she left, that Lanfear snatched up, the one that was like an acrobat, yeah, I think it was ivory. But,
Lanfear put it on, was going to kill or capture Rand, and she either hit or tackled Lanfear before she could set any menacing weaves on him and knocked her into the fox's twisted door Tarangreal, and it melted, I guess, from their power struggle.
Yeah, I wonder if that Angreal was somehow attuned to producing pain, because that's the first thing she does with it when she gets it on is she says, "Pain, loose Theron." I mean, she could have obviously just woven that weave, but it makes me wonder, because of the shape of it, with an acrobat tied, bending backward with feet and ankles, it sounds really, really uncomfortable, sort of like what Mogedion did to Nynaeve when she caught her in Tel Arun-Riad.
I think it was described when it was first looked at by somebody that they thought it was an acrobat rolled in the little wheel thingy touching her feet, but then on closer inspection they noticed that it wasn't necessarily an acrobat, just a woman whose feet and hands were binded together in what could possibly be a painful or torturous act.
That's true. It's an Angreal attuned to women, but it is in the shape of a male who is bent backwards into a circle with wrists tied to ankles.
I just wonder if it has some sort of an affinity with causing pain because of the shape of it. I mean, it seems that frequently the shapes of Angreal and Tarangreal don't have that much to do with what they are. And it looks like to me that a lot of the Angreal are worked in the form of humans. You know, we have Elaine's woman cloaked in her hair, Angreal, and Wan's fat little man, Angreal, and there were one or two others that I think were mentioned, but then there are plenty of others that aren't. Maybe it was a Sarangreal. I was thinking of the fluted rod that they used to heal Matt, but that was a Sarangreal, wasn't it?
That's a nice, fancy one, the most powerful one that the White Tower has in its possession, as Elaine talks about when they're healing Matt. That's the one where they had Swan and 9 other Aes Sedai together. They didn't have a full circle of 13, but they had almost a full circle, weaving the flows through that powerful Sangreal in order to heal Matt.
Coming back to the shape of the Angreal and Sangreal, I think I might have an idea on why they're shaped like that. Like all the swans that are like statues of people, I think might have been pre War of the Power. I think it'd be, you'd want to have something to amplify your power and you're in peace, so you'd make these elaborate and intricate little statuettes that signify, beauty and, I guess, peace. Whereas during the War of Power, I think they just snatched up anything that could be, like, kind of hidden, like a ring or a bracelet or, stuff like that, as opposed to having actual statuettes, because if you're, running around with a statuette and somebody, catches you and who's a dark friend and finds you, it's going to be, oh, that's obviously a Tarangreal, whereas opposed to you're wearing, like, the small little golden ring or the finger rings and the bracelet and some of these other ones, it could just be one of those, she's got a bunch of jewelry on her kind of thing.
Well, some of them definitely were worked in the form of ornamental jewelry. One of them that they found in Abu Dhar was the amber turtle that they had, and then Varun has evidently one that's worked in the shape of a flower. It's a brooch. I think they said it looked like a lily with too many leaves or something. And then, as you mentioned, the bracelet and rings set that Nynaeve wears. And then Cadswain has one of her hair ornaments, too, the little shrike ornament. But of all these, the only one that we know of for sure that's a male Angreal is Rand's fat little manned one that disappeared after Dumai's Wells.
Yeah, I think it's a little funny. It's like, I'm looking through the list of the Angreal and Songreal, and it's just like FFFFFMFFF, and it's like, Robert Jordan did not give these guys hardly anything.
Well, I think the part of the problem was that they've had all these things lying around that only women could be attuned to, because the only male channelers tend to get either genaled early or die, or they just never touch the power and would know one if they picked it up. I wonder how many male Angreal and Songreal Elaine Knight have discarded after Abu Dhar, or in Rhuidean, or in the Hold of Tyr, that might have been male Angreal. Of course, most of what she threw away was chair legs and so forth, but still.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's so many things that could be an Angreal, and I mean, now that Elaine has one, she was mentioning that she wants to learn how to try and use her ability to make Terangreal and wrap it around the idea of making an Angreal. Back to the list of them, though, my favorite of the Angreals, I would have to say the one that stuck in my mind the most, aside from the very first one, the woman that Moraine had, is the bracelet and rings one that Nynaeve has.
Yeah, that's stuck in my mind really well, because if I'm not mistaken, Nynaeve has like slightly bigger hands than one of the Seafolk women who puts it on to work with the Bowl of Winds. She has smaller hands, but when she puts it on, they seem to kind of go in and fit and not really be loose or anything. They seem to go with it.
Yeah, it's one of those really funky things. Yeah, it was Olivia that she uses to give it to during the cleansing of Sidene. She takes it off because she's going to be channeling through the Terangreal access key, which is something we're going to talk about in a few minutes, and therefore doesn't need to have that little Angreal to help her, whereas giving it to one of the others who's going to help defend them just means that they might survive a little bit longer, if not the whole cleansing. So, I mean, now that we've gone through all of those Angreal, why don't we take a step and go on to the same sort of idea, the more powerful Songreal, and in which case, going through all the books, we've only really managed to discover four of them, one of which is, as we've mentioned before, the little fluted wand that they use to heal Matt. Then there's also the ever obvious and extremely powerful and also flawed Kalendor, which is a big crystal sword attuned to men. After the fluted wand and Kalendor, there's also the two great big huge statues known as the Chodin Kal, one of which is a big serene looking woman holding a crystal globe in an upraised hand, which is sticking out of the island of Tremelking. Then there's also the equivalent male version, which is again a dignified looking male standing holding a globe in his upstretched hand, buried just outside of Kyrian. So you've got to worry about those two there and how potent they are, because I mean, during Book 9, using the two of those, Rand and Nynaeve managed to cleanse the male half of the source to get rid of the Dark One's taint. So, I mean, if those things aren't powerful enough for you, I don't know what is.
I don't think we have to worry too much about the one on Tremalkin, because the female one was destroyed. Not only the access key that melted when Nynaeve was finished using it, melted in two, I believe. Cadswain picked up the pieces anyway. But I believe that the statue itself was broken. But the one that Rand has, the male Chodin Kal and the access key are intact, and I think one of my favorite parts of it were when they were cleansing Sidene, they flashed to this image of this guy. It's like a guy driving a cart taking his brandy to market, and he's going by the pit where they had been digging the statue out of the ground for Galdrian when he was still alive, and he can see the glow Now, I don't know if that means that anybody can see the glow, or if this guy was like one of the Ashaman but didn't know it, you know, a man who could channel but had never touched it. But I always thought that was kind of funny because he turned right around and said he was going to go back home and drink all that brandy himself.
Yeah, that was pretty good.
One thing I wanted to say, though, is from what I remember, the actual Chodan call on Tremel King wasn't broken. It was just the one access key that Nynaeve was using ended up melting itself in half. But from what I remember of the chapter To Make an Anchor Weep, I believe that's in book Knife of Dreams, they say that they went from one to one to one because the people from Tremel King and all those nice little islands out there, they went from one to another to say that the time of illusion has come to an end and it's time to move on and thus kill ourselves, as that's what kind of happened. But I don't recall hearing or seeing any mention that the Chodan call was broken. It was just the Tarangriel that I remember hearing was broken.
But also the female Chodan call on Tremelkin was melted after the cleansing. That was what the Almayar saw as the sign that made them commit suicide. The time of illusions was over. The statue itself also melted.
I thought the crystal cracked and broke apart. I didn't think it melted. I thought the access key melted and it broke apart, like the big crystal. And since that's the only thing that can be seen, that's where they went for it. Back to the male Chodan call, since they're both a pair and were meant to be used as one, I believe this thing's going to be huge in the last battle. I mean, if the biggest thing it's been used for so far is the biggest thing anybody's done with the power, the cleaning of the taint, but I can't wait to see how it goes with the last battle, if Rand's gonna actually get his nerve to get a hold of it again after he was afraid to use Kalendor for the fear of the power that he could have and becoming power mad, like when he tried to resurrect the little girl in the fourth book. I want to see if he'll actually take the Chodan call and just blaze a path through it. Shael Ghul, that is.
Yeah, I don't think he will, because I think he went so berserk with Kalendor because, as Cadswain said, it's flawed. It lacks the buffer that most Saangriel have, and using it unaided by a woman induces wildness of mind, and I don't believe that the Chodan Kal were known for that because they were made properly.
Well, I know that. It's just he's been afraid of Kalendor and the power it gets him for that situation. So that's always been piquing my interest on what'll happen with his one, since it's still, as we know, intact.
And that's another interesting question, too, because of those two very powerful Saangriel, now the female one has been destroyed, and as well the access key, although I do believe that there were more than one access key for each statue. It won't do them any good. Well, we know there were more than one, because the one that was broken in half was found in the Panarch's palace when they were searching for the sad bracelets. Now we have the male one left, which obviously is going to be useful for Rand if he decides to try and use it in the last battle, but I almost wonder if they might not be able to find something else that's almost as powerful for the women, because it seems that there's always a desire to have balance in these books. There's, for each side, there's an equal and opposite, and it's almost like that would give one part of the, you know, the men, the male channelers, more power than the female in the last battle, and I'm not sure that that would work. What if one of the Dark Friends or one of the Dreadlords or Forsaken take the male access key away from Rand and use the Chodan Kel against him? I'm not sure that they'll be able to do that, but that would certainly make sense.
It would make sense. What I'm thinking might happen is we found two female Chodan Kels. One was broken, one wasn't. If I'm not mistaken, in Robert Jordan's small writing, the strike on Shael Ghul, once the breaking started to happen, they took the access keys and destroyed most of them and hid the few that weren't destroyed, so none of the Dark Friends could find them. And I'm wondering if, since there were two that were found for the women, if another one would be found, where Dreadlord, Time, or Moradin, since he is nameless, will get a hold of it and kind of Asmodee and Rand in Rudeon go at it where they can both only draw on half of it.
Ooh, that would be epic again.
Yeah, but the thing is, though, if they do something like that, it's going to almost be redundant because it's already been done once when him and Asmodian were doing things or doing that. So, I mean, he doesn't tend to like to repeat himself as much with scenarios. I mean, yeah, sure, he has a lot of battles, but there's very little repetition in the series, and I have a sneaky suspicion that that idea there is going to get debunked, but that's just my personal thoughts.
Yeah, I have to agree. Except for the mysterious double chapter with the farmers giving them scarves in the first book, which I think was just a mistake, where he basically wrote the same thing over again twice. A lot of people have brought that up. He doesn't like to do the same thing over again, so we can pretty much assume that Elaine's not going to get kidnapped again, and that, you know, Tom is not going to go missing again, and all these other things that he's already done are not going to happen. I would lean more toward the idea that either one of the Forsaken might take away the access key that Rand has, or they'll find another one and lay plans to use it against him during the last battle, in which case then we have to think, what sort of a thing could he find? Maybe something that Moraine will bring back from the land of the Finn, the Ilfin and the Elfin. Maybe she can bring back something that would be a match for that, that he could use. Or maybe the whole thing's a moot point and that's not where RJ's going at all with it. Or Brandon Sanderson now.
True enough. Very, very good thoughts there.
Well, we're running kind of long today. We barely scratched the surface of all these objects of the power, and I mean barely scratched the surface. We have a lot more to talk about, so perhaps we can get back to this in another podcast. And if that's the case, we could definitely plan to do that, and we would welcome anybody's input. If you have a favorite object that you would like to talk about, or if you have an idea of about one of the ones that we have or have not talked about yet, please let us know. There are a number of ways to contact us. One of the ways is with the podcast forum at dragonmount.com under the Fourth Age podcast. Each episode will have its own list of comments that people have left.
Another way you can get a hold of us is through voicemail. It is a straight dial-in number. Call in, you leave a message. There's nobody on the other line, unfortunately. I mean, I'd love to be able to sit there and answer and talk to you guys personally, but there is nobody there. And that phone number is 1-888-333-7690.
And you can also reach us at our email, which is podcast@dragonmount.com. We really appreciate everybody taking their time to listen to us, and we always welcome feedback and comments, and we've given you all the ways that you can do that. Please feel free to chime in with whatever your theory or even crazy theory is. We love to hear them, and we do try to reply to all the emails, and we plan to do more listener feedback on the air, but we'll be reading some more of your input and comments. And we want to thank Mark for coming to be with us. We've really enjoyed having you. You've been great. And Morgan, you've been great too. Thanks.
Thank you much for that, Virginia. It's great to be here. I'm hoping that we'll be able to keep this discussion up. Actually, I'm fairly sure we'll keep it up for the next podcast because that's just the way we work here. If we don't get it all done this time, we certainly keep it going next time. So until then, I wish you all a great, safe, happy day, night, evening, whatever it is where you are listening. And we'll talk to you soon. Farewell.
Well, thank you, Virginia. And Mark, I want to say you're doing a really good job, and I hope to be able to work with you on many more of these podcasts. You're just really great and insightful. When the great Lord arises, I'll look down on you all.
Thanks, Morgan. I'm not going to be holding my breath for that day. And in the meantime, this is Virginia, thanking you once again for listening and exhorting you all to please walk in the light.